Hello and welcome to the Keeper Cup podcast. Chad Young here with Pete Ball. And we're officially, this is the first, second episode, I guess, that's come out since the end of baseball season, but it's the first one we're recording with no baseball going on. Last time we were following along, I think in game three or something. There's Arizona Fall League. There's not no baseball.
Yeah, I haven't been following Arizona Fall League much at all, but I did follow the demise of the New York Yankees. So, you know, I felt terrible. I shed a few tears and, you know, gosh, I just hope they get Soto back, because imagine they lose him and lose the World Series. That would be really tough for those lovable fans.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You know, fans who grab hold of outfielders' arms and try to rip their gloves off. Awesome stuff.
I don't know how to explain how I feel about that situation, because it's egregious. He never should have done it. It's awful. He put Mookie at risk. I also love that it happened. Like, that's just that's just so awesome. It's such a great picture.
The funny thing is, I had made an argument with some fans and some other people in the Auto News Slack earlier this year that there should be no fan interference rules except for contact with the player. If the ball goes into the stands or near the stands and a fan can get to it, like even if they lean out over the field, that should just be fair game.
Yeah, why not?
And that's what I'm saying.
With that. Yeah, actually, I like
and,
that.
And people are like, well, how do you protect players? It's like, it's simple. Any contact with the player at all, and it's off. That's it. You cannot make, you know. And then this happened, and people were like, you really still think we should just like open this up and let, I was like, I said no contact with the players, but I also get that as soon as you open it up, it could get worse. So
yeah. Cause you can't trust the fans to like actually not make contact with the players. We're talking about like drunk people. I'm willing to bet that guy had a few.
Certainly not Yankees fans.
Yeah. That's true.
Yeah. But we've been getting some very, very slow trickle of baseball off-season news. It sounds like Roki Sasaki is likely to get posted, which is pretty exciting.
And that's different from, like, you know, a few months ago, it was like, no, it's probably not going to happen. I can't remember why, but it looked like he wasn't going to get posted this year.
Well, he's still, it's a little like where Otani was, where he's still in those pre-free agent years, where if he gets posted, he's an international free agent, and he's subject to all the same rules as, like, you know, 14-year-olds in the Dominican or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. So like he can't sign a big contract. He can get a signing bonus, but it's limited. He comes over with, you know, years of team control, so he'll be on like league minimum salary. Like it's that thing. Whereas if he waited a year or two years, three or something like that, then he comes over as just like a free agent. But he seems to want it, and I can't really argue with him if that's what he wants to do.
Especially if he wants to go to the Dodgers. Cash in, man. Get some rings.
Yeah. So he seems to be coming over. There's been some, you know, rumblings already about possible landing spots for Soto. There's been some talk about Blake Snell. No real big moves yet. There were a couple of like random trades, like Scott Kingery got traded.
Whoa.
But not much. But
did you say Jorge Soler?
Oh, Soler got traded. That's right. Soler for Griffin Canning, which is a...
Oh, I didn't
like
know that
happened. And I was like, this is such a weird trade. And the only thing it makes me think is maybe Griffin Canning is better than I realized, because why else would the Atlanta be making this trade?
Yeah, I think, well, with Soler and Ozuna, that was going to be a weird fit anyway. But I didn't know that. I didn't know Griffin Canning was in that trade. I've been kind of like tuning out baseball to like restart. But now I'm getting, you know, I'm in an NFBC 50s right now. So the break lasted all of like 42 hours.
I hope it was a good 42 hours.
It was great.
We do need to, before we get too deep into any of this, it is episode 154 of the Keeper Cup podcast, which means we're looking at jersey number 54. Boy, this just gets harder and harder. Because this one, Goose Gossage, probably the best bet. Sonny Gray wears 54. Irvin Santana. I liked Irvin Santana for a period of time there. I would not have guessed that Irvin Santana was still pitching in 2019. I feel like I was like 5 years off on his whole career. Like I would have guessed 2000 to 2010 or something, but nope. Yeah. I'm not giving it to Aroldis Chapman. Sorry.
Fair enough. Yeah, I'm not, believe it or not, I'm not gonna fight you too much on that one.
No. Yeah, and then you get down to like Sergio Romo, who's kind of fun, I guess, but Yeah, I think it's got to be Gossage.
Yeah, and if we wanted to go the fantasy relevant route, then I guess Freed or Sonny Gray. So, yeah, let's go with Gossage.
Sure. The Goose Gossage episode. Congrats, Goose. I'm sure you're very excited. We're not going to do our head-to-head heroes because nobody is playing baseball, so there's nothing to talk about there, which means we can dive right into our content for today. We got a couple of things we want to cover. One of them is related to, I recorded an episode of On the Corner with Nick Pollock today about today being Wednesday the 6th, by the way, when we're recording. But I recorded that episode with him about the Pitcher List Podcast Network mock draft, early mock draft, that I represented Keeper Cut in that draft. And we had our recording to discuss what happened there. And you and I, Pete, we're going to look at that draft from a Keeper League perspective. It was not a Keeper League. I'll get into a little bit more about what that draft was in a minute. But we're going to look at it from a Keeper League perspective and talk about guys who we would have pushed up our board in Keeper Leagues and maybe how far we would have gone. The other thing we're going to get to later in the episode is, it seems ridiculous, but we've got some logistical stuff to handle, Pete. We've got this Dynasty League we co-manage, and there was a deadline like a week or two ago to have any players like get down to roster size, and we just straight up didn't do it. So we're going to do that. We're going to talk about who we need to
do our homework.
This team. Yeah. Matt Heckman is the commissioner of that, and he's been harassing me. So I'm going to put an end to the harassment. But first, I'm going to delay that. You know, I've been putting it off. I'm going to put it off a little bit longer.
I don't know what it says that he thinks about me if he harassed you, but won't even message me.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I think he might have tagged you. I don't know. Well,
maybe. I don't know. Yeah. A lot of notifications in that Discord. Not Matt specifically, but just the Pitcher List Discord.
Yeah, for sure. There's a ton going on over there.
Oh, yeah.
But we've got this draft. I'll put the link to the Clicky draft board in the notes so people can see it for themselves. Pete, I sent it to you earlier, so you've got it. Mm-hmm. So this draft, this is, you know, Nick does these early drafts every year. They're very standard Yahoo format, 12 teams, head-to-head, 23 rounds, pretty straightforward. Three outfielders, two utils, no middle infielder, no corner infielder, I think 8 or 9 pitchers with no SP versus, you know, RP spots, just pitchers. So we did this draft. And I thought this is a good opportunity for you and I to look at this from a keeper perspective and identify guys, especially, you know, different parts of the draft, perhaps, who you look at and you go, man, for a keeper league, I would love to have taken that guy there. And then maybe push ourselves, like, how far up would we have moved this guy if it were a keeper league draft? So, Pete, why don't you know, you've got this in front of you. Let's start by looking at the first 4 rounds. And I'm going to sort of gloss over the first round. I'll read out the first round just so people have it. But Ohtani, Judge, Witt, Jose Ramirez, Ellie De La Cruz, Soto, Gunnar Henderson. I picked 8th and took Tatis, Kyle Tucker, Lindor, Betts, Yordan Alvarez. Those guys, let's sort of assume that there's no keeper value there. They're already first round picks in a lot of keeper leagues. You know, both of our listener leagues, for example. By the way, if you're listening and you're interested in the listener leagues, we've got a couple of openings. Hit us up on Twitter at Keeper Cut or hit me up at Chad Young. We'll see if we can get you in there. But in those leagues, for example, you can't keep those first round picks anyways. So looking at rounds 2, 3, and 4, though, is there anyone there that you're like, man, I would be thrilled to get this guy in a keeper league at that price?
Yeah, thrilled. You know, this early, it's tough to get thrilled. So I'm looking like who could realistically be worth more than what I have them for, which is what we look at with all our keepers, obviously. But in the first 4 rounds, it's particularly difficult. And so I'm going to immediately just skip right to round 4. And I see 2 names that really stick out for me. Wyatt Langford down the stretch really started to look like everything that everybody drafted him to be. You know, the sky's the limit. If this were a keeper league, he might have even gone in the 3rd round, given how much he showed down the stretch. I think the 4th round is right for redraft, which is what this is. So I think there's some value there. And the other one, Chad, you know, I'm curious your thoughts, is a guy we talked about a lot this year. It's a guy that a lot of fantasy podcasts talked a lot about. But if I'm going to keep a pitcher, it's not going to be in the first four rounds. If I'm going to keep a pitcher in the first four rounds, it has to be somebody who has SP1 upside. And I think that summarizes Garrett Crochet pretty well. That is SP1 upside. At the very least, he could easily lead baseball in strikeouts. I think he led baseball in strikeouts per nine this season. So Crochet and Lankford stick out as, if I got to pick any of these guys, of these 36 players, I'm going with those two.
Yeah, I mean, I think that makes sense on Crochet. I took a couple pitchers in the first four rounds here. I took Sale in the third and Logan Gilbert in the fourth. I felt good about those, but I agree with you. Like, Sale was the fourth pitcher off the board. There's no exciting keeper value there. And Gilbert went in a run in that fourth round. He was the last of a four straight pitcher run. Corbin Burnes, Cole Reagans, Garrett Crochet, who you mentioned, and I took Gilbert. Gilbert is, I really like Logan Gilbert. I'm very happy to have gotten him there. He definitely, though, is not the upside of Crochet. And so I think you're right. I think if one of those pitchers is going to be your keeper here, it is Crochet. Enough that I would actually be like, oh, I should have taken him in the third if there were sewer keeper league. I don't think so.
Yeah, no.
I think I'm just sort of happy to take him here, and assuming it's a plus one round kind of cost next year, there's a shot I might keep him in the third next year. But I actually, the most likely scenario is that I'm not keeping anyone out of this group in the third, out of that group of pitchers. Out of the hitters, I think Lankford is a good call out. The other guy I would call out right at the beginning of the fourth round is Brent Rooker. Rooker had a great year. He followed it off from another very good year the year before. Now, you know, not for great reasons, but he should be in a much better hitter's environment than the Oakland Coliseum. So I think there's a chance that Rooker repeats what he did from a talent standpoint, but gets more production as a result of the better home park and moves himself up to being in that third round. Like, I look at some of the first basemen who are going in the second and third round, and like, Rooker could put up production that matches those kinds of guys, but in the outfield. So, you know, he went right after Jackson Churio. The other outfielders who went in the third round were Jaron Duran and Jackson Merrill. Rooker's a different kind of player than those guys. And so it's a little hard to immediately be like, oh, I would have taken him. He'll be a keeper over a guy like Churio, or as good as a guy like Duran or Merrill or whatever. But like, I don't think he's that far off from that class. It's just a different shape of production. And then you look at all those third basemen there, and like Devers, Machado, Jazz Chisholm, Austin Riley, like, yeah, I could see Rooker being a third round keeper.
Yeah, for sure. I like the Rooker call out. His pace was crazy. But speaking of pace, I guess I just kind of missed him there, which is rare for me because I love this player. Jazz Chisholm could be interesting, where like he was pacing when he got traded to the Yankees. He was on a crazy pace. Now, he disappointed in the playoffs, and so I think that is probably watered down a little bit of the hype with him in pinstripes, which I'll take. Because I could see him, you know, a full year in Yankee Stadium, which that's going to be hard for him because he's not a guy who typically plays an entire year. But if he does put a full season together in pinstripes, we could be looking at like, you know, a 25-40, a 30-45 season, which would put him there.
He put up a 24-40 this year, right? And then after he went to New York, in 191 plate appearances, which was, you know, less than a third of his season, 11 home runs, 18 stolen bases. His batting average jumped from 249 to 273. That was in part because he brought down his K rate after moving to New York. He also jumped his home run per fly ball rate from 13.5% in Miami to 23.9% in New York. Now, obviously, half those games were still on the road, but half of them were at Yankee Stadium. And right. He, that short porch is going to be real kind to him. So if he keeps that home run per fly ball rate up, it will help the BABIP stay up. It was 311 in Miami, 306 in New York. It should actually, if anything, I think be higher in New York, because a lot of flyouts in Miami are home runs in Yankee Stadium. And instead of being negatives on his BABIP, they just go away. Mm-hmm. So I'm with you. I think I probably, I watched him, you know, I watched him obviously that entire Guardians Yankees series, and he was like, just not that interesting. Mm-hmm. His postseason, he had a 250 wOBA in the postseason.
Oof.
But it was 353 with the Yankees, and you get that plus you add in the 18 stolen bases against two caught stealing with the Yankees, and you know,
and he'll have outfield eligibility at least next year, right?
Yeah. And the other thing that he benefits from in New York is, assuming they, whether it's re-signing Soto or adding Pete Alonso or whatever, assuming they build out that lineup again, he benefits from being in a lineup where pitchers have to pay less attention to him and more to the hitters when he's on base. Hmm. So, yeah, I think that's a good call out. If he actually does put up like a 30-40 season at third base and outfield, which is at least possible, yeah, picking him as a second round, like in the third round, to make a second round keeper is real interesting. I mean, he's bordering on first round production with those numbers.
He is, and kind of the cherry on top here is that Glaber's probably going to find himself a new home this offseason, which means Jazz is probably going to move to the leadoff spot, which now, you know, imagine 30-40 with 110 runs. I mean, he really could be in store for an absolute monster season.
Yeah, and boy, having him, like, the pitches he'll see, especially if they re-sign Soto, but the pitches he'll see with pitchers knowing that they can't afford to walk him because Judge is next.
Mm-hmm.
And the reality is, it's interesting because, like, you think of, like, he doesn't seem like an ideal leadoff hitter because he's not a super great on-base guy because he doesn't walk a ton, but forcing pitchers to go at him will actually play to his strengths because he wasn't going to draw the walk anyways. So if they don't throw him anything out of the strike zone,
he's an aggressive.
Aggressive will help. So yeah, I think it's a good call. Let's jump to the fifth through 10th round. Let's go with a little bit of a wider swath this time.
Okay.
But looking through there, a lot more pitchers in this group, and boy, almost all the rest of the outfielders. It felt like by the end of the ninth, 10th round, outfielders were just dried up, which gets into the pick I made in the ninth round. And I'm going to call that out now because I think this is, from a keeper league perspective, one of my favorite picks in this draft. Honestly, it's one of my favorite picks in this draft that I made from a redraft perspective, but even more so from a keeper league. But Luis Robert Jr. in the ninth. You and I talked about him an episode or two ago, and you were high on him, and I was sort of pushing back, like, I don't know, he's had some down years. And at some point in that, you were like, I don't know, you really think he's like outside the top 100? And I was like, no, I don't think he's outside like the top 100. I think he's just not where, like, I think people are going to be taking him in like the third or fourth round, and that seems crazy to me. I know his upside is even beyond that, but I can't do that. And then at pick 104, he was just still sitting there, and I was like, well, fine, I'll take him then. But in a keeper league, yeah, I'd push him up, I don't know, probably to this sixth round, maybe even the fifth, because he could easily be, like, it wasn't that long ago we thought he was a second round value with a possible first round price tag in the future. That talent is still there. And Nick pointed out as we were recording this morning that, like, you know, he had some injury issues, and there's all that. But, like, he also just looked dejected this year. And you have to wonder how much just being on literally the worst team ever dragged him down. The White Sox are not going to be good next year, but it's still a new start. It's still a new season. They probably will be better. And who knows if he gets traded, things like that. But yeah, I just think there's potential for Robert to be a guy who, like, if you took him in the sixth, you may end up keeping him as a fifth, a fourth, a third, and a second the next few years.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, like you said, you know how I feel about Luis Robert, and you know, looking at this range 5 through 10. I think he also would have been my first pick for this activity that we're doing. You know, I'm not going to count round 5 here when with this statement that I'm about to make, because there are some seriously elite outfielders in round 5, and I think I would prefer probably all of them to Luis Robert, but every outfielder that went ahead of him in round 6 through 8, that's Ian Happ, Spencer Steer, Kerry Carpenter, Stephen Kwan, James Wood, Lawrence Butler, I would rather have Luis Robert. At least in redraft, James Wood is an interesting one for keepers. He would cost you 3 rounds more, but he's also got just as much upside as Luis Robert. I'm definitely with you on that pick. And I'm going to stick in the same round here, Chad, and I'm sure you're going to agree with this one. Yoshinobu Yamamoto went in the 9th round?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a slam dunk one for me that I'm taking. You know, it feels like we were recently in a recent episode anyway, talking about how like there were like maybe one or two pitchers that we would rather have than Yoshinobu Yamamoto in all of baseball. You know, looking at it, we finally have some pen to paper here with an actual mock draft, and you know, you can see where the names went, and you know, thinking about it, like definitely those guys that went in the 2nd round, Wheeler, Skeen, Skuball, I'd rather have them. Sale coming off is arguably his best season ever. I can understand that, but like, I don't know. It's hard to make cases against other pitchers because I think there's so many good pitchers on the board here.
Yeah.
But Yamamoto is just as good as any of them, and he's super young and he's on the freaking Dodgers. So like, right. 9th round Yamamoto, sign me up.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. And I think he's a good example of a guy that, like, had he gone before, like, I took Dylan Cease in the 6th. And so I remember I had taken Gilbert in the 4th. The pitchers who went after Gilbert were Kirby, Imanaga, Michael King, Cole, and Cease. Oof. King, I don't think I would put it that level. Yeah. But all those other guys, if you want to tell me you like them more than Yamamoto, I'm with you. I get it. I have no like, and I picked Cease over Yamamoto. I later picked Blake Snell over Yamamoto, and that is maybe a little iffier. So like, I get what you're saying, but I also look at that group and it's like, I would take Yamamoto over King. I would take him over DeGrom. After DeGrom, you have Pablo Lopez. I would take him over Pablo Lopez. Shohei Ohtani, the pitcher, just the pitcher version of Ohtani versus Yamamoto is actually, I think, kind of interesting, especially with Yamamoto or with Ohtani coming off Tommy John and, you know, all that. But I don't know. You start to get into a group of guys there. Like, I would take him over the guys who went right before him, Hunter Green. I know you would take him over Logan Webb.
I wasn't going to say anything, but yep.
Tyler Glasnow is interesting too. But yeah, I think you could easily push Yamamoto up a couple rounds there. And if he is healthy and effective, yeah, you can end up feeling pretty good about keeping him. Like, if I look at that group that went in the 4th round of Burns, Reagans, Crochet, and Gilbert, could Yamamoto be a keeper at that cost next year? Yeah, for sure.
I mean, Chad, let's say you were drafting right now, like I am, because I have a problem, I guess, and you're convinced I'm going to take a pitcher and the top two names that you see are Corbin Burns and Yoshinobu Yamamoto. Who are you taking there? Because I think I'm taking Yamamoto.
I think I'm probably taking Burns, but I get what you're saying.
Yeah, and there's a 5-round difference between them in this draft. So
yeah, agreed. The other pitcher I think worth calling out. I did take Snell in the 8th, and I do think like, there's a real chance that he just like signs in December because he's done with this stuff and shows up ready to go next year and puts up his 3rd Cy Young caliber season and looks like a great keeper there. But I also get like he's been up and down. There's some real risk there. But the other guy that went in that round was Shane McClanahan. And like if he's healthy and is the guy he was before he was hurt, he's going to be a real easy keeper at an 8th round cost. He probably should be up around this 5th, 6th round in a keeper league.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with that, especially when you see like DeGrom is just a few rounds ahead of him. Now, granted, DeGrom got to get some innings in this season, but he's also a lot older than McClanahan, so right. I think that's about right.
Yeah. We are also, at this point, you mentioned Wood before. I took Junior Caminero in this group. There's we're starting to get some of those prospects popping up. They're to me a little less interesting for this, unless you think you're going to move them up a bunch. Because like, yeah, we get that Wood and Caminero could be keepers. Like that seems obvious. That's why you would draft them. But I actually feel like they got pushed. Wood in particular got pushed up more than I would have been comfortable with in this draft. Mm-hmm. I took Caminero. I actually thought he went a little early, but third base got. I mean, if it wasn't him, within the next round, we got Matt Chapman and Alex Bregman, and then it was like, do I take Alec Bohm later? Do I take Jake Berger? Like, I don't know.
Yeah, that's tough.
So I actually don't feel like I got some great, like, I'm not sure I feel like I got such great value on Caminero that even in a keeper league, I would push him up much beyond where I took him. It just was a good value for third base because third base was a mess. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll get through the back half of this draft. All right, welcome back to the Keeper Cup podcast. Looking at the Pitcher List Podcast Network mock draft, we've looked at the first 10 rounds. Let's look at, do I want to make this a bigger group?
I think we can just do 10. What is it, 11 through 15?
Sure, let's do 11 through 15. So anyone you see in 11 through 15, Pete, that you're like, man, I wish I'd gotten this guy at this value. This looks great.
Yeah, there's a lot of names that I like personally like, but I'm not ready to say it's like this amazing value. Like I still love Gavin Williams. I still love Shane Baz. I guess two names stick out. I'll just get one out of the way very quickly because it's not very interesting. But Luke Weaver looked like maybe the number one closer in fantasy. You know, you're a Cleveland fan. I'll be respectful. He looked like the second best closer in fantasy.
He was great.
He was, I mean, seriously, the guy was absolutely incredible, which is so cool to see because he's been around everywhere, failed starter, like most closers. It's cool to see him latch on. So if he really is that good and he is the first or second best closer in baseball, then he is absolutely worth keeping for a 13th round pick. But I don't like keeping closers. So I'll focus on Dylan Cruz, who, the final line doesn't look great. The average was pretty low, but I don't know. It felt like he was pulling his weight for a while there, which we just haven't seen from a lot of prospects when they first get called up. And I think in Cruz's case, you get the power speed combination. It's a young, exciting team on the rise. And I don't know. I've got good vibes about Dylan Cruz, and I like that he got that major league experience. I was wondering why people were adding him in some of my short keeper leagues, like three or four keepers, because I'm like, he's not going to debut before the end of the season and you're just going to end up cutting him. Sure enough, he did. So look, there's warts. And like I said, the final stuff doesn't look great, but I could easily see a player of that caliber ending up being worth, you know, a 14th round pick. And that might also just say something about this particular range, because nothing's really shouting out to me like, oh, this guy's going to be a value here. So that's why I'm going with a closer and with a prospect who's barely debuted.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I will say I think you are very close to picking the right guy here. The guy who went literally one pick before him, I think, is a better choice. And that's Parker Meadows.
We are a Parker Meadows podcast. We are a Detroit Tigers outfield podcast.
I was talking to, that was another conversation I had. Nick had asked me at the end of our episode today, like which pick that I didn't make did I really like? And I commented on his pick of Riley Green and pointed out, like, I have this issue that I just love all the Tigers hitters. So, but Meadows, you know, he was up at the beginning of the year through May. Was out for a while. When he came back for three games in July, and then was out again with a hamstring injury. If you include those three games in July, it doesn't really matter if you do or don't, but if you include those three games in July, he, over his last 213 plate appearances, which I'm picking to include because 213 is a nice, easy, he'll probably get three times that next year. 299 average, 344 OBP, seven home runs, six stolen bases. So you're looking at 2020 with a high average, and he was great during the playoffs too. And you're getting that from, you know, a 25-year-old, like he just turned 25, like this week, just turned 25, 25-year-old outfielder. I'm really excited about Parker Meadows. I think if I look at this draft, you know, guys in the round, like three outfielders went the round before him. Jurickson Profar, Josh Lowe, Nick Castellanos. I would take Meadows over all those guys. The round before that, Tyler O'Neill and Randy Arozarena. I think I would take Meadows over both of those guys. The round before that, Adolis Garcia and Colton Cowser. It gets a little bit iffier, but really until you get to me taking Luis Robert in the ninth, Meadows is right in that group with all of those guys. I could see taking him over any of those guys. And I think his value is going to go up next year. So yeah, I would, like, in a keeper league, I would gladly push Meadows closer to the 10th round, thinking he could still be a keeper.
Yeah, I don't see anything wrong with that. I guess something to keep an eye on. There's not much you can do with it at this point, but he was caught stealing four times in 13 attempts, and that kind of sticks out a little bit. But unless you think that means he's going to steal less next year, which I don't think that's going to be the case, then I guess it's not much of a concern. But I do really like Parker Meadows as well. Detroit's fun, man. That's a young, good team.
Yeah, it is. I think the other thing I'll say about this set of rounds, there's a ton of arms that went off the board here. And so, you know, you have Ryan Walker, Robert Suarez, Felix Bautista, Luke Weaver, Pete Fairbanks, Kirby Yates, Tanner Scott, Camila Duvall, all as relievers. Again, I'm not super interested in relievers as keepers, as you said. Duvall sort of stands out there because we know what he's capable of, and it's been sort of, it was so ugly this year, but I don't know. But if he gets back, maybe. But then, yeah, you look at the starting pitchers and Wu, Gausman, Steele, Flaherty, Hunter Brown, Pepio, Jared Jones, Senga, Rodon, Sonny Gray, Kikuchi, Minaya, Robbie Ray, Ronaldo Lopez, Lugo, Jeffrey Springs, Luis Gil, Nick Pivetta, Mackenzie Gore, Shane Boz, Gavin Williams, Yu Darvish, Tanner Houck. Now, it is not all of those guys who have keeper potential, but most of them I could look at right now and be like, yeah, I could totally see that guy being a three or four round better value than where he was drafted. Mm. And so I think the thing that stands out for me if I'm drafting in a keeper league is that when I get into this middle part of this draft, I want to be in a position with my pitching where I can draft for upside and not need to worry about volume or innings or reliability, right? And so one of the risks of waiting on pitching is if you wait till this point in the draft, it's a little harder to draft for upside because you need guys who you can count on. For me, I'm not sure I did this very effectively, but again, it's not a keeper league. But like, because I took Sale, Gilbert, Cease, and Snell in the first eight rounds, had this been a keeper league, I would have been in a position, like Nick and I talked about the fact that I took Hunter Brown over Jared Jones. And he was like, I would definitely take Jones over Brown. And then he was like, actually, Brown's got a lot of upside. He was really looking good. And you have so much pitching already that I get why you would do what you did. Right. It's like the option to go after the upside of Brown, the upside of Gavin Williams, the upside of Shane Boz, the upside of Jackson Joe, oh, Job's around later, but the upside of guys like that in this chunk of the draft exists if you've got enough pitching up front to be able to absorb the risk of them not being good. And there's risk that they won't be good. Mm. So I would rather in this part of the draft be playing the, in a keeper league in this part of the draft, I would rather be playing the high upside, high risk game than taking the safety of a Sean Manaea, a Seth Lugo, a Nick Pivetta, guys like that.
Yeah, I'd include Houck in that as well, given the lack of strikeouts. So this really is a, you know, you can go for the home run or you can take the safe guy. And I agree. I want to, this is the range I want to take some risks in.
Yeah. So let's take a look now at rounds 16 through 20. Again, a lot of pitchers, people waited on pitching. So there are a lot of pitchers here, but you're also now starting to get into like just a way riskier group of players in general, but there's a number of fun names in here.
There is a number of fun names in here. There's a few names too that just like have fallen off the face of the earth because they were former guys or were very recently going in the top 100, like Nolan Jones, like Jordan Walker, like Evan Carter, who, you know, that's three young guys who could tap into some potential. I think for me, the name that sticks out is Jason Dominguez. You know, if the Yankees do lose Juan Soto, even if they don't lose Juan Soto, Dominguez is going to basically be an everyday player next year. We've seen in flashes just how good, just how dynamic and talented he is. You know, like Dylan Cruz, who I was just talking about, it's not like he doesn't come with his warts, but he's so young, still just 21 years old. Number one prospect in the Yankee system. I really expect him to be at least a serviceable fantasy player, if not an excellent player to have. And I think the playtime's going to be there. So, you know, it is actually funny I bring up Dylan Cruz, because looking at where Dylan Cruz went compared to Jason Dominguez, I'm not going to take Dylan Cruz in the 14th round if I know that I can get Jason Dominguez in the 19th. And I guess the one other name for me, Chad, because I know you're a big fan of him as well. I don't know if this was – did his, like, late struggles cause this, or did people just forget about him in the rankings? That's Spencer Arrighetti, who flashed enough, you know, had enough, like, double-digit strikeout games and plays for a really good team where, like, I would feel very comfortable taking him in the 19th round, assuming he has serious keeper upside.
Yeah, I think that's right. Dominguez, let me ask you on Dominguez, how far up would you push him? Would you take him in the 14th where Cruz went?
You know, I'm looking at the outfielder specifically, and we've done this a few times now, and it's really interesting. I would take him before Pete Crow Armstrong, before Jordan Walker, before Nolan Jones, before Taylor Ward, before Evan Carter. And then we get into this Cruz, Meadows, Dominguez group, which... And Nimmo, I actually really like Nimmo, so I'm going to combine the four of those. Nimmo, Cruz, Meadows, Dominguez. If you need safety, take Nimmo. Otherwise, looking at these three names, I think Dominguez and Cruz have the highest ceilings, and I'm just going to say right now for me, those two are tied. I think both of them could be absolutely elite. I didn't even realize how much Dylan Cruz was stealing bases, not to go back to him, but 13 stolen bases and just like 120 at-bats or something. So, yeah, I really like both those players. But if I have to pick one based on these rounds, Dominguez in the 19th, sign me up.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. I like that one as well. I do think like in a keeper league, I love the idea of taking a shot at Jordan Walker in the 18th because I think like, we've seen him be a good major league hitter. We know he can do it. And so it's a question of finding it again. You can make a similar case for Nolan Jones, although I think there's more warts in even his good year to be a little bit cautious about. I made two plays here with upside with Kyle Manzardo and Jordan Lawler in the 18th and 19th that are both guys I mean, I effectively took them because I think that they have upside beyond this. And so it'd be silly not to acknowledge that the keeper value could be there as well. But if I'm looking at a name that really sort of jumps out at me, I have a little bit of a hard time here. Part of me wants to talk about Jordan Romano or David Bednar, because like those guys were elite closers and then had injury issues and struggled this year. And like they could easily reestablish themselves as elite relievers again. But I don't want to talk about relievers. Nobody wants to talk about relievers. They're not interesting. And so I'm going to take the other guy, though, I will mention is I am really intrigued by Bowden Francis. Yeah. I know there's some real concerns and red flags in his profile, but
he was just so good.
He was so good.
Oh, my God. So, every outing, he was just so good down the stretch, that is.
Right. And so it's pretty... It's pretty easy to look at him in the 17th and you know, dream on what's possible. So he'd be the other name that I think jumps out at me from this group.
Yeah. I like the Lawler one. I feel like he's, you know, kind of getting forgotten about. I know he can't stay on the field and he wasn't performing. He got a cup of coffee with the Diamondbacks 2 years ago and was brutal. But when he came back for a brief period last year, it was very, very brief. He looked really, really good. And then he went down with another injury. So if he's healthy and can get that job, I like it. He had crazy fantasy upside. So, yeah, Lawler, I don't mind that pick at all either.
All right, let's take a quick look at the last three rounds, 21 through 23. I'm again going to call out one of my own picks here, but mostly because I think it's we already talked about him a little bit, and it's unnecessary to talk about, which is nobody really asked about Roky Sasaki. Mm-hmm. Now, this draft was a couple weeks ago, so this was before he turned down that offer from the Marines. It was before it became more clear that he was being likely to be posted. So I was just like, 23rd round, if he gets posted, I win. And if he doesn't, I'll dump him for someone else. Fine. We're going to know a lot more about whether or not he's getting posted. If he is getting posted, he's probably like, he's going to go 15 rounds earlier than this. So I don't think there's anything to talk about there right now. But others in those three rounds that you're like, yeah, this is a guy I want for a keeper value, and I probably would have taken him earlier.
Yeah, so I mean, there's a lot of prospects here, and with it being just a 12-team league and 23 roster spots, I think even in redraft, it's tough to roster those guys. So I'm not gonna pick them. The two that stick out are Isak Paredes and Yuri Perez. I'm just shocked. Like, look, I was leading the band when it comes to no, I don't believe in Isak Paredes, but to see him go from like one of the best hitters, not only in fantasy, but in baseball, to a 21st round pick is a little startling. So he jumps off. But Yuri Perez is a guy who has SP1 upside. I mean, granted, he had Tommy John in April, so he might not be back until after the All-Star break, but we're talking a keeper league. So you might be getting a top five, incredibly young, massive upside arm who has not only major league experience, but dominating major league experience here in the second to last round. I mean, that's a pick where you could end up keeping him for the next 10, 12 years. So the Yuri Perez one, I really like.
Yeah, I like that one too. I think that makes a ton of sense. I suspect he fell so far here just because it is a redraft and he could miss a bunch of time. Paredes is a great call out because I think that there's some confirmation bias happening here where everyone was like, even people like me who believed in him were like, man, Wrigley's not as good a fit. He's obviously going to take a tumble. And then he did. And it went like horrifically wrong in every way imaginable. And I think people have overreacted to that.
Agreed.
Whereas like, had he gotten traded to, I don't know, what's a place that's easy to hit home runs to left field? Because he's right-handed, right? Yeah.
Houston.
Let's say he got traded to Houston. Yeah. And he had gone on a cold streak to end the year, just didn't hit for Houston. I don't think people would be like, oh, it was just Tampa.
Right.
Right. It would have been a totally different narrative around him. And people would have been like, yeah, you know, he had a bad couple months. It happens. And it just stands out because it was after this trade. I do think there is risk that he's not the same hitter outside of Tampa. I do think his price should come down. This is way too far. It's just a big overcorrection.
This isn't even a price. This is free. Like in a 20 league, your last 3, 5, 7 rounds are probably guys being cut. So,
yep. And yeah, I think those are the guys that stand out to me. I mean, again, like you said, there's a lot of prospects in here. I don't think they're interesting to talk about right now. And other than that, I don't see a ton of guys. Like, maybe you can make a case for Nick Martinez. I'm a little surprised Willier Abreu was available in the last round. But there's not anyone else that really jumps out at me as like, yeah, that's the guy. Why didn't I take him? I should have pushed him up a couple rounds. So yeah, that's our analysis of this mock draft. Let's take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll turn our attention to this dynasty team that we need to do some work on. All right, welcome back to the Keeper Cup podcast. Chad Young here with Pete Ball. We just went over our, keeper league choices from the non-keeper league mock draft that I participated in. But now we're going to turn our attention to, I guess, also not really a keeper league, but with some keeper implications. And that's this dynasty league we're in. It's a pitcherless dynasty league that Matt Heckman runs. We co-manage a team. And the context here is it's a 24-man active roster, 30-man roster. So 24 position, like active positions, 6 bench spots, 20 minor league spots. We also had 5 injury spots, IR spots, and we were using those. And we need to get rid of five guys to make room for our five injured guys to be back on our active roster, because the IR does not, or IL does not exist in the offseason. So the first thing that I'll note as we're looking at this is we don't have anyone we can move into the minors. Actually, I don't think we're allowed to move guys in the minors anyways. And we have no one in the minors we need to promote as of this moment. We have guys that we will hopefully be promoting, you know, soon. But no one we need to do now. So we only really have to look at our major league players. And the five guys that we have in IR spots right now that we need to move are Gabriel Moreno, Ke'Bryan Hayes, JP Crawford, Hunter Renfro, and Yoshinobu Yamamoto. And, you know, my first thought is, like, the easiest thing to do here is, like, Hayes, Crawford, and Renfro can probably just be cuts. But then I was like, yeah, we should probably look at our roster and see if we've got some active players we would cut. Because, like, one of the guys on our bench is Dylan Carlson. I think we can move on.
Cardinals thought
so. Yeah, I'm looking at this, and, you know, Yamamoto, obviously, we need to make room for. I think we need to make room for Gabriel Moreno. Early projections mm-hmm. are really good for him. He's still very talented. It's a two-catcher league, and our catchers are Ivan Herrera, who it sounds like he's going to be the starter now. The Cardinals announced today that Wilson Contreras is a first baseman / DH. So Herrera is interesting. And we have David Fry, who I really like, but Fry had Tommy John surgery and is not going to be able to hit for 6 to 8 months, which means he's gone through April and maybe through June or July. Well, through May or June, I guess. Could be back as late as the start of the second half, basically. And then he can't play the field, which means he may not have any position eligibility long term. And so I guess, as much as I like Fry, I mean, man, he was so good last year that it is awfully hard to just pass up what he brings to the table. And if we can move him to an IR spot, I would probably do that, but we can't.
We've got a lot to break down here, especially when it comes to the pitchers that we could cut. I don't think I'm ready to say that I want to cut David Fry because it is a two catcher league. And even though long term he's going to lose it, he's going to have it for next season. And we might need that. Like if David Fry comes back in June and has catcher eligibility, he's going to get picked up pretty quickly. Whereas we might have some guys here that we just have no interest in using. Yeah. And David Fry might be a guy that we would actually use pretty quickly.
Yeah. And I think, you know, looking at our offense, you talked about like the pitchers we have to drop. Let's look at the offense first very quickly. Cause the reality is I think
it's pretty good.
It's pretty good. And I don't see a lot of obvious drops here. So Fry, Herrera, and Moreno are catchers. I don't really want to drop any of those guys. I made the case for dropping Fry, but I hear what you're saying. But we need two catchers, and he's not one of them to start the year. So if we're keeping him, I think we still have to keep the other two. Mm-hmm. And then you got Vlad at first. Right now we have Mookie at second. He's going to have to move. Let's move him to shortstop right now. Which means our second baseman at the moment is Jorge Polanco. And we don't have another second baseman. And so first of all, Polanco is bad this year. Second of all, he's getting out of Seattle. And I think he's a better hitter than that. And we don't have another second baseman. So I'm not super tempted to drop him. Mm. Our third baseman is Jazz, who we've already talked about being high on. Mookie at short. Rhys Hoskins at the corner infield spot with Willy Adames at middle infield. Our other infield options are the IL guys I mentioned before, Ke'Bryan Hayes and JP Crawford. And then our outfield is Bellinger, Kerry Carpenter, Trevor Larnach, Jesus Sanchez, Kyle Schwarber, who needs to move to util because he is util only now. Nick Castellanos, Dylan Carlson, and Colton Cowser. And then Hunter Renfro, who's on the IR. I mentioned before, I think Carlson is one of our drops.
I would agree, and I'd add Renfro to that as well.
Yeah. Okay, so that's two. We've got two. As I mentioned before, our corner infielder right now is Rhys Hoskins. We're pretty good at first and third with Vlad and Jazz. Our only other corner infielder on the roster, not only other, because Bellinger still has first base. But besides that is Ke'Bryan Hayes. I keep believing there's got to be more there. Yeah. It keeps not showing up.
Yeah, man, I can't do it anymore. Like if it's between praying for Ke'Bryan Hayes to be remotely useful or having David Fry, who we know we could really use, because if something happens to one of our catchers, the best available catcher is like Marty Schleppenheimer, then I really would prefer to keep Fry,
so,
I think.
So if we're making a list of guys we would cut, Hayes is after, I think, Carlson and Renfro, just because he's arguably more useful for us based on our roster, mm-hmm. but before Fry. Do you agree with me that Polanco is a keep?
Yeah, especially considering I hadn't even noticed that Mookie was currently in his second base, and he doesn't have that anymore, obviously. So I would hold on to Polanco.
Yeah, and then the only other... So the other bats that might be worth discussing, we haven't talked about J.P. Crawford. He had that really nice 2023. 2024 fell back to earth, 9 home runs, 5 stolen bases, a 304 OBP. This is an OBP league. I don't know. I don't feel a great need to keep J.P. Crawford.
No.
I'd keep him. I think he's actually very much in the Hayes camp for me, where like I kind of get why you would keep him, but I don't need to keep him. So, yeah.
Something to circle back on with Jorge Polanco. I still don't think we should cut him. Like I'm perfectly fine with holding on to him. Luis Angel Acuna, is he going to be the everyday second baseman for the Mets? He's in our prospect pool. Right now, he is slated to be their everyday second baseman. He doesn't have the eligibility yet. He only had one start there last year. Most of his starts were at shortstop, obviously, but he'll get it. So we aren't quite as dependent on Polanco as it may appear, but because Acuna has a very limited sample, he's not that highly rated of a prospect. He's a good prospect, not an amazing one. I'd still rather hold on to Polanco, but we do have a little bit more breathing room than we might have originally thought.
That's true. The other bats I think maybe worth discussing. Nick Castellanos hit 23 home runs, 311 OBP, but I don't know. And Trevor Larnach, who is a part-time player, but in that part-time, 15 home runs, a 338 on base percentage. Sure. And Alex Kirilloff retired, so there's a little bit less competition in Minnesota. Those are the other guys who I think are sort of borderline. I think like Schwarber, Kauser, Jesus Sanchez, Kerry Carpenter, Cody Bellinger, like those guys are obvious keeps. Mm-hmm. But those are the other, you know, Larnach and Casty are just guys I would keep in mind as we turn our attention to our pitching. So the pitching that we are turning our attention to, I mentioned Yamamoto. There are some obvious keepers here. Yamamoto, Snell, Boz, Arrigetti, Gavin Williams, Sean Manaea, Nick Lodolo, Max Fried. Among our relievers, I think AJ Puck is an obvious keep. I think obviously Yoan Duran is, Pete Fairbanks is. The guys I didn't talk about there, Javier Assad, who had a good year, but Ben Lively, who had a good year, but Simeon Woods Richardson, who's got some upside, but I don't really care about him. And Yu Darvish, who I'm always lower on than everybody else.
You just had to take a shot at my man there.
I don't think we're going to cut Darvish, but at least not at this point. But I don't think he needs to be on our opening day roster either.
This pitching is like stacked to me anyway. There's one guy who I think should immediately enter the cut situation, and that's Javier Assad. You see a 3.73 ERA and you're like, oh, that's good. And I'm not going to take that from him. But this is a quality starts league. He barely ever goes at least 6 innings, whereas Ben Lively does. So if those are the first two on the chopping block, which actually I would put Simeon Woods Richardson on the chopping block before I put Ben Lively, then I think Javier Assad is the weakest of that group. He's just not good. His swinging strike rate last year was 6.6%. So, yeah. Like that combined with a whip of 1.4, it's obviously suggesting that ERA is a lie. I don't think he's very good. I don't think he brings anything to the table. He was good to roster last year. He put some good starts and some good stretches together. I just don't expect it to happen again.
Yeah, I would just note Assad had 6 quality starts to Lively's 9. So it's not like some crazy huge.
Lively had 50% more.
Fair. But it's not like we're talking about, you know, Fried had 16, Manaea had 15. Even Snell had 10. Arrighetti had 10. Like, yeah. Yamamoto, for all the missed time, still had 7. So I'm just saying, like, that neither of them were beasts in terms of piling up quality starts. If you believed Assad was a better pitcher on an inning-by-inning basis than Lively, I don't think the quality start gap is enough to justify Lively over Assad. I also don't know how much I care about either of those guys. So I don't know that we need to argue this much longer.
No. If gun to my head, I have to get a quality start, I'm going to choose Lively over Assad, but you're right. I mean, neither of them are going to rack them up. We only need 5 names. And I think one of those 5 names has to be Javier Assad.
So going back to our full list here, we had Hunter Renfroe, Dylan Carlson, J.P. Crawford, Ke'Bryan Hayes. We sort of mentioned Larnach, Castellanos, and Fry, but I'm going to put them to the side for the moment. Simeon Woods-Richardson, Javier Assad, and Ben Lively. So that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Is that right? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. So we can keep 2. So first of all, David Fry, Nick Castellanos, and Trevor Larnach have all received a stay of execution. They are all safe. None of them are going anywhere. We can keep 2 of Renfroe, Carlson, Crawford, Ke'Bryan Hayes, Simeon Woods-Richardson, Javier Assad, and Ben Lively. We keep 2 of those 7.
Ooh, lucky us.
Given how many outfielders we're already keeping, I think, like, to me, Carlson and Renfroe are, like, of the 4 bats, they would be the last 2. Like, I would keep both Crawford and Hayes over those 2 just based on our roster as it stands.
Mm-hmm.
So I think those guys are just straight up gone, which means that we can keep 2 of Crawford, Hayes, Woods, Richardson, Assad, and Lively.
I think for me, I'm keeping the bats. We're pretty thin on bats as it is on our bench. And those 2 guys, as unexciting and arguably bad as they are, they're guaranteed at bats and plate appearances, which, like, this is a super deep league. So, like, that's not nothing. It's not great, yeah, but it's definitely not nothing. And we definitely had situations last year where guys got hurt and we just had a really hard time replacing them because the available pool is so thin. So as long as Crawford and Hayes are mainstays in their respective lineups, I think they bring more to the table for us than Lively, Assad, and Simeon Woods-Richardson, particularly because our pitching is also just really, really good. Like, yeah. I don't, you know, knock on wood, because who actually has good pitching? The Dodgers thought they did. Their whole rotation got hurt and they won the World Series anyway. But on paper here on November 6th, we have a really good rotation.
Yeah. And I think right now, so like I said, there's 6 bench spots in this league. It is daily lineups. We have 2 bench bats and 4 bench arms, which I don't think is the right balance. And these cuts we're talking about, if we cut, so let me start doing this now. Well, I'm not gonna start doing it yet. If we cut Renfroe and if we've caught Renfroe, Carlson, and those 3 pitchers, we will go from 4 bench arms to 2. I know I said we're cutting 3, but we're moving Yamamoto off the IR. So we'd still have 2 bench arms, and we'd have 4 bench bats. We'd have Crawford, Hayes. Oh, wait. No, we have to cut one of those. Oh, no, we cut all those pitchers, right. We'd have Crawford, Hayes, Larnach, and Fry, basically, as our bench bats, knowing that at some point in the spring, Fry will hit the IL and we'll replace him. Probably Maybe with a catcher. I don't know, but maybe not.
Yeah, we would still, you know, ideally, hopefully have Herrera and Moreno fully healthy and in their lineup. Yeah. So I don't think we'd need it to be a catcher, but I kind of like the balance that we got going on there.
Okay. So I'm going to make these cuts. I'm cutting Renfro. Submit. I am cutting Carlson.
You know what? While you're doing that, I don't want to mess you up, but we actually will not need to pick anyone up because we'll probably just activate Luis Angel Acuna when the season starts to fill that Fry spot.
Yeah, potentially.
Yeah.
We're going to cut. Hold on. I'm going to cut Simeon Woods Richardson.
Yeah. See you later.
We're going to cut Ben Lively. Once I find him, there he is, Ben Lively. And we're going to cut Javier Assad, which will then allow us to move Hayes to the bench, Crawford to the bench. It gives us, why do we have four bench bats? I feel like I'm missing.
Did you put Moreno in?
I have Fry and Moreno on the bench.
Okay.
No, that's what we had. Yeah, we had this. This is right. Yep. And then Arrighetti, Baz. The one maybe questionable thing we have here right now is I think we have, I think we're short a reliever.
We got AJ Puck.
Oh, we have Puck in a starting pitcher spot. So he moves to a reliever spot. Yamamoto goes back into the rotation. And yeah, there we go. 24 active players, 6 reserves, no one on the IR. Good work, us. And yeah, we were going to be less than an hour and we're over an hour. So we're going to cut this off right now. But Pete, thanks for going through that. Hope you had an enjoyable time remembering who was on this roster. Now that you know. And yeah, to everyone who's listening, thank you for listening. Another reminder, if you're interested in playing in our listener leagues, to hit us up on Twitter at Keep or Cut, cut with a K. You can also find me at Chad Young. You can find Pete at Pete B Baseball. And hope you enjoyed us. Be back with you in a couple weeks.